T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We're gonna play on and stand strong with Trollo and Deals. Turn the game on, bump up the volume. It's time to play ball. Trollo and Deals, turn the game on.
All right, everybody. Time to go to work. Welcome to the championship rounds of Jolo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. It's a Warrior Wednesday brought to you by our friends at Porsche of Walnut Creek, a Michael Stead dealership. Huge day for the show. Huge day for the Bay Area. The move has been made and the news broke last night as the San Francisco Giants have hired former Philadelphia Phillies manager Gabe Kapler to be their new skipper. It's a 3-year deal. Kapler is going to be introduced at Oracle Park later today. For those who don't know much about him, 44 years old, spent 12 years in Major League Baseball as an outfielder. He played for the Tigers, the Rangers, the Rockies, the Red Sox, Milwaukee, and the Rays. Hit 18 homers with Detroit in 99, hit 311 with Colorado in 2002. He was with them for part of the season. He played for a few teams that year. The key to his career was that he was a part of the 2004 Boston Red Sox World Series championship team, the team that came back from 3-0 down against the New York Yankees in the ALCS, and then they went on, obviously, to sweep the Cardinals in the World Series. Now, after his playing career, he became the director of player development for the Los Angeles Dodgers, November 7th, 2014. That will be an interesting point of debate in a few moments as we explain something that happened there that's brought a lot of controversy with him to the Bay Area, but that's how he knows Farhan Zaidi, and that's part of the reason Zaidi decided to tab him as the team's new manager. In 2 years with the Phillies, he went 161 and 163. What you'll notice in Philadelphia is the way the team faded in the second half of the season. It's only 2 seasons, but in year one, at the break, the Phillies were 53-42. They were actually a half game up in the division. So they were a playoff team at the All-Star break. They went 27-40 down the stretch, 8-20 in September, finished 10 games back in the division, 10.5 back of the wild card. Last year with Bryce Harper and a loaded roster, again, first half of the season, 47-43. They were a half game back of Washington for wild card one. So again, they were a playoff team. They were the second wild card team at the break. Then they fizzle late, 34-38 down the stretch, 12-16 in September. They finished 16 games back in the division, 8 games back in the wild card. 2 years with the Phillies, had a playoff spot at the All-Star break both years, faded late, has a lifetime record of 20-36 in the month of September. For me, that's a concern. The first year, not so much, but for it to happen again the second year with a better team shows me they didn't learn any lessons. That's just one thing. John Heyman, MLBInsiderRadio.com, joined us earlier today, had this to say about the hire.
The reason this took so long is they were anticipating a backlash, and they were trying to judge exactly how big the backlash would be, how big a PR hit that they would take, and whether it was worth it to do that going forward. And I think basically they were leaning this way probably the whole time.
So what do you make of the hire? You hear the news last night. Are you excited? Do you think this is the right move for the Giants? Are you concerned? Do you think it's a bad move? Where do you land?
I'm concerned, but I'm excited to the extent that Farhan Zaidi got to do what he wanted, because he clearly wanted Gabe Kapler. He hired him in L.A. when they were down there together. They withstood a controversy and something that they didn't handle correctly. Farhan addressed it. I know you'll get into the details momentarily on that, but that situation, that incident wasn't enough to deter Farhan from wanting Gabe Kapler. Kapler goes to Philadelphia, and he's the definition of mediocre, 2 games below 500, yet Farhan Zaidi still wants Gabe Kapler. So I'm excited to the extent that you hired Zaidi to be your president of baseball ops. He brings in the GM that he wants, and now they have the manager that both of them want. The three of them are now connected. As you always say with the 49ers, it was Lynch, Shanahan, and Garoppolo. Their fortunes are intertwined. So that, I think, is the best way to do business. So from that standpoint, I'm excited. There are questions about what he did in Philadelphia. You read about all the comments from the Philadelphia pundits about him being too loose, too much of a player's manager, the Segura incident where he doesn't run it out and McCutchen gets hurt, and then Segura's not pulled out or benched. There are certainly things that you can question, but to the extent of the controversy, hopefully Kapler addresses it today at the press conference, and Farhan Zaidi getting the guy that he wanted, that to me is good news for the organization.
5-10 years down the road, do you think we look back and we say, that was a good hire on behalf of Farhan Zaidi and the San Francisco Giants?
I think time will tell what happens. I think that right now, if you look at it and you say, how was this hire? I'm with Dibs when you say, at least you know Farhan got to choose his man in spite of all the imperfections, in spite of all the things that comes with it, the different things that people are saying. He got to choose his man. We know that. Now, can everyone pick up today? Does everyone says, do they question it? Without a doubt, you have to question it. You question it because of what happened, of course, in L.A., but you also have to question what happened in Philadelphia. You say, wow, here's a guy that people are saying. We've had several people on the show, and they said, hey, look, he starts off good because of the fact that he does know baseball, but he's a little loosey-goosey at times, and players don't necessarily play for him. He doesn't put the demand on him that you need to. Because you have to in every sport. I talk to you about all the time. You can have certain guys like North Turner, great offensive coordinator in the NFL, unbelievable offensive coordinator. But if you put him at head coach, because he doesn't put the demand on the players and hold them accountable and get in their face at certain times, and he has other guys do it, then you start to lose that. So hopefully Gabe has learned from that. Hopefully he's going to get better from that. So we understand that Farhan got his man. But no matter what, people can complain. You're going to have people that complain if whoever they would have got. And you have people that's going to be happy whoever they got. But because of this hire has some speculations and have some other undertones with it, you're going to have more people that's going to question it more than you have if you would have gone out and got a Jule Girardi or guys like that.
I do appreciate the way they went about it. There were a variety of ways you could get this information out to the people. You could have made the hire right away after Philadelphia dumped them. Remember, that's what Michigan did with Jim Harbaugh. Harbaugh was done on that Sunday after the Arizona game, and the next day he was in Ann Arbor. The next day he was in Ann Arbor at a press conference signing up with Michigan. They could have done that, but instead they were methodical. They, at the very least, and I'm not saying they didn't do this behind the scenes, but they at the very least presented the illusion that they were very thorough in their process of investigating Gabe Kapler and making sure that all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed before the hire. Then what they could have done was, well, if this isn't going to land well, we could just dump it in the Friday news cycle. We could dump it Sunday morning at 9:45, 15 minutes before the NFL kicks off, right? So people see it, they hear it, they acknowledge it, but then they quickly have their attention shifting elsewhere. They could have done it like that. There are a variety of ways they could have slipped this through and tried to dodge any of the questions that were coming their way. Instead, they did the exact opposite. They picked the marquee day of the week where they knew they could make maximum impact and draw maximum attention, and that's Wednesday during an NFL season. If you're up against the NFL, you're not going to be able to do it on Monday, especially this Monday, because everyone was getting set for Niners Seahawks. You're not going to be able to overshadow that. You're not going to be able to do it Tuesday because everyone wants to hear about Niners Seahawks. You're not going to be able to do it Thursday because it's time to start previewing the Arizona game. And you're certainly not going to do it Friday because that's the full-on preview of the Arizona game. So the best day of the week in TV, radio, during the NFL season to get any big news out there that you want to land in a big way is on Wednesday. So they announce it Tuesday night, giving everyone the opportunity to book their guests, to come up with their notes, to do their prep, and to spend all Wednesday talking about it. They're not hiding from this. They're not worried about they're worried about the backlash, but they're prepped for the backlash. They didn't present the image here that this was some haphazard hire. This wasn't, remember what happened with the Lakers when they ended up with whoever's managing them now? Who is coaching the Lakers? Is it not Lawrence Frank, I want to say? Frank Vogel. I always get the two confused. That wasn't their first choice. Then they fired Luke, and then they went to get Ty Lue, but they didn't want to commit the 5 years to him, so he balked, and then they end up with the whole thing seemed like you were just getting scraps, right? That happens all the time. Feels like teams are getting scraps if there's six openings in the NFL. When Shanahan was hired, they earmarked that early, but because he was in the Super Bowl, they had to wait. But you had all this coaching carousel running around, and you don't want to be the last one to get a good coach. Same thing happens in college football, college basketball, all this stuff, right? They went out, and they took their time with it, and they made sure maximum impact with it. They're out in front. You got questions for them, they're there to answer them. And I applaud them for that. I applaud them. I'm not going to sit here and say it's a great hire because I don't find it to be the most inspiring of hires. But I do know that the guy who hired him is the guy that every decision he's made so far is pretty much something I've been behind, right? We talked about what was he going to do at the deadline. He kind of found a way to make everyone happy. You were still able to go for it, but you got some assets in return. And those assets are exciting. He seems to have a handle on the situation. He doesn't seem like a guy who's overwhelmed. Like Adam Gase in New York with the Jets, he seems very overwhelmed by the job. Everybody in Chicago seems overwhelmed by the job. Zaidi seems in control, and this seems like a controlled hire. Whether it works out remains to be seen, but again, seems like a controlled hire. We got Butcher Boy on the phone. I've been wanting to get him on all morning. Butcher Boy is going to be filling in for Damon Bruce today. Damon's out sick, so it's going to be Butcher Boy, Matt Kolsky, and Ray Ratto from 2 to 6. Butch, thank you for joining us. I know you're very busy. I'm very excited. I couldn't find you on social last night. I didn't want to read it. I didn't want it spoiled via the written word. I always love hearing the verbal word. Where are you at on the Kapler hire?
One word. Ugh. I mean, really? So uninspiring. Are you kidding me? You got rid of a Hall of Fame legend in Bruce Bochy so that you could go get the meathead that is Greg Kapler? I mean, come on. You know what this smacks of? I'm telling you. This smacks of when Parag Marate took over the 49ers and he brought his Excel spreadsheets and all of the numbers crunching and he said, you know what, that guy over there who's our consultant, Bill Walsh, I don't want him in here anymore. I don't do things by the gut. I don't do things old school. I do everything with numbers crunching. And look, I get it. Farhan's done some really nice things in, what, 16, 17 months? I like the guy. Believe me, I do. You're going to follow up Hall of Fame Bruce Bochy with meathead, emotional, completely out of touch, Greg Kapler. I mean, give me a break.
First of all, it's Gabe Kapler.
It's the least inspiring hire of all of them. At least give me a nobody. Give me somebody I've never even heard of. Give me Omar Vizquel. Give me somebody that the fans can actually relate to. I get it that the GM is the one who's going to be setting the lineups and every single pitching change is going to come out of the Excel spreadsheet. But geez Louise, can you give me somebody that I don't instantaneously hate upon arrival?
All right, now hold on. There are guys who have shown that after a previous stint, they've gone on to do great things. A.J. Hinch did nothing with the Diamondbacks, went on to win a World Series with the Astros. Terry Francona was run out of Philadelphia after not doing much, had a great career, won two World Series with the Red Sox, and then went on to get to the World Series with the Cleveland Indians. So I know you are as diehard as they come. I know you love Boch, but at some point, the era's got to change, right? Like, couldn't this new direction be a nice, fresh breath of air for this club?
Look, you didn't even reference Loser Joe, a.k.a. Joe Torre, who was a mitigated disaster in St. Louis before he gets to the New York Yankees and becomes the great Joe Torre. But here's the common thread of all those guys that you referenced. They're all calm. Their demeanor is very stoic, very relaxed. Does Kapler strike you as somebody who's relaxed in the dugout? He looks like he's ready to get his pump on at any single second in that dugout. And that's not what I want. I mean, look, going back to even across sports, you want your leader to be the most calm, thoughtful. The guy has foresight. He's thinking 3, 4, 5 moves ahead. There's a reason Bruce Bochy was the puppet master. There was a reason this guy was so quick with it when it came to the bullpen and the understanding and the communication. I don't want somebody who's a hothead. I want somebody who's cool hand Luke in that dugout. The baseball season is a long, long grind. We know this. The last thing I want is somebody who's ready to literally drop down and fist fight with a player at any given moment. And then on top of all of that, look, I don't condemn him for what happened with the Los Angeles Dodgers. We'll never know. You know, times have changed so much in just the last 5 or 6 years. Who knows what his culpability was? Who knows what the other Dodger front office culpability was? But let's be honest. I mean, if you're going to go to the pound and go get a puppy, okay, do you go get the Rottweiler that's got all the warts and has been biting people left and right? Or do you get the brand new puppy that doesn't have any backstory, that you don't have to worry about around the kids, the youngsters, the guys you're going to be bringing up, like Joey Bart and this kid Hunter Bishop who you drafted from Sarah High School. Like, I want somebody who's at least a little more calm. But I hope I'm wrong, because I'm going to be honest with you guys. When we hired Bruce Bochy back in 07, I said, Bruce Bochy's a placeholder. He's only here for 1 or 2 years as Barry Bonds leaves, and they're looking for somebody to transition into the new era. And I was completely wrong. Completely wrong on Bochy. He's the greatest manager I've ever seen. I hope I'm wrong with Kapler. I'm willing to give him a fresh start, but I'm going to be honest, guys. I mean, it's baseball. The way this thing works, I'm giving him 2 years. He gets this year, and he gets next year. I need to see progress. You need to be sniffing the playoffs by the end of year two, and I'm dead serious on that.
All right, final question for you. I know you were down at Levi's Monday night for the Seattle game. Tell me about the atmosphere. What's the place like? Is it ready? Is it ready to assume the mantle as one of the hostile environments in the NFL?
Let me tell you, I was calculating with my grandfather since I was 5 years old. I went to games before that, but from what I can remember, I've been to about 150 NFL games, okay? That's Candlestick, Levi's combined. I've also been to the Oakland Coliseum a couple times. That was a top 10 game I've ever been to. And I'm not just talking about the play on the field. Absolutely, the play on the field was unbelievable. I'm talking the environment, the atmosphere. That place was packed. Everyone was standing, and it was shaking. Now, I remember back in Candlestick, you could feel all of the seats rolling and shaking, and the noise level would just be through the roof for those Monday night games. I'm telling you right now, Levi Stadium showed out. I was so proud of all the fans. Nobody left. The entire lower bowl stood the entire time. Outside of the New Orleans playoff game against Drew Brees, I honestly can say I've never been more impressed with the 49er fans. Like, you could tell this was about 6-7 years of pent-up frustration. We were dying to kick the crap out of Seattle. Everybody was unified. It was a great atmosphere. And I'm going to tell you right now, the noise, and I'm not even kidding. My grandfather, 85 years old, he's been to games from Kezar.
All right. We lost him. The take is so hot, he burned up the cell phone lines.
Man, he don't take a breath.
He is up. He is upset.
He's gassed right now.
He's willing to give Greg Kapler a chance. That's my takeaway. Although he immediately blasted him as being a meathead, but he's willing to give him 2 years. That's Butcher Boy for you. Don't miss him today, 2 to 6.
I love that. Well, he's filling in for Damon Bruce today, so he's going to be in with Kolsky and Ratto, 2 to 6 p.m., but that's what I want. I want the take of the fan. I want to know what exactly people feel when this comes across. For me, it's not that simple. For me, it's about being analytical to the approach. How can I see it from both ways? How can I lay out every possible angle to this? How can I make sure I don't miss anything, be detail-oriented, buttoned up, present all the information on air, and then eventually make a call? But that's what I love about the fans, the guys who live and die with this. You don't have to agree with him, but you know that guy bleeds orange and black. Bleeds. I wouldn't be surprised if he was in the shower, naked, crying like Ace Ventura after finding out Finkel was a man when he found out that Bochy wouldn't be coming back. Like, in the shower, you can just see him. You can see him. He bleeds this stuff. That's what I love about him. That's why I love bringing him on. He obviously doesn't speak for everyone. He speaks for himself, which is what I love. Not a fan of the hire. That's understandable. Everyone's got their opinion. I don't think everybody feels that way, but clearly this is not something that has got him gassed up.
No.
But part of it feels like he loves Boch so much, I don't know if anyone would have been good enough.
Well, and I feel good about the fact that he doesn't like the hire, because he said in his rant he didn't like the Bochy hire. And so that turned out to be okay.
But maybe he's due.
But Butcher Boy's due to get one right, you're saying?
One right.
I think the default is, when you're a super fan, and you were talking about this with the Twitter outrage, you're more likely to be outraged over something like this, especially when you've got the situation in L.A., which was badly handled. It was a terrible situation. So he's already got that as one knock on his resume. You go to Philadelphia and you underperform with a great roster last year. That's knock two on your resume. And so now you come to San Francisco, and I think it's easier to default to the negative. I see the positive in that you turn the keys to the kingdom over to Farhan Zaidi and said, fix this. Last year, and Butcher Boy said it as much in his call, he started to fix it. You churned the bottom of the roster. You're starting to get rid of some of the bad contracts. You're fixing that part of it. And if Zaidi thinks that this is the guy to shepherd them through the next 2-3 years, you got a 3-year deal, then I think you got to put your faith in Farhan.
If you trust his judgment, it's probably a good hire,
right?
Because, you know, he was the guy tasked with making the decision, and rationale would lay out he's not going to go out of his way to make a bad hire. It's not like Zaidi's sitting there going, you know what? I still bleed that Dodger blue. I'm going to find a way to set these guys back in
right.
A few years. That's what I'm going to do.
Sabotage.
I'm going to work the system from the inside.
Do you think if Farhan's There was other guys out there we understand that probably if he would have hired, you'd have a little bit more leeway. Do you think if it's go awry, do you think that he's attached to this? Or do you think they won't be as willing to say, you know what, we'll move on. We'll move on.
I think he gets plenty of time because they're all attached to it. I think they'll do everything they can to put him in a position to succeed, because if he fails, that lands on everybody. That's a mess for everybody.
Can they handle it, though? Can Forhunt, I understand
here,
their
yes. That, if, the if best the noise, part is, yeah. is him getting hired here.
Okay.
No one's going to criticize him.
Right.
No one's going to attack him. We played that audio earlier in Philadelphia of Angelo Cataldi going after him. That doesn't happen here. Right. This is the best possible spot for a controversial individual to land, whether it's a player, whether it's a manager, whether it's a front office executive, because no one's going at him. It's the Bay Area. It's laid back. It's calm. Outside of Butcher Boy, no one's going to get that worked up. So he lands here. If he lands in New York to take over, if he lands in Boston, if he lands in Chicago, they're going crazy over this. Here, it's like, you get a couple thoughts. People go outside. They'll enjoy the sunshine. They'll move on with their day. This is a great landing spot. No one presses you here. You don't get pressed at all. The media does not squeeze you. No one's trying to put you in a bad spot. No one's trying to confront you. It's just, tell me whatever you want to tell me. I'm going to write about it, talk about it. I'm going to move on. It's a very easy place to conduct your business.
It is, but is it to a detriment? Because you say that, and we all agree that it is different. You're not going to get pressed and squeezed. I do understand that. But they press you and squeeze you in another way. They just don't buy tickets. They just don't show up.
Wasn't that everywhere?
But if that's the case, it's just everywhere. But when it's everywhere and it's noise on top of it, then you see moves. If it's just the case here where it's the tickets and you already had a down ticket, you had a guy in the skipper in Bolche. So I'm just asking a question. Who was the manager here? And all of a sudden they said, okay, he was laid back. But people did say it's time. People were. You hear the calls. It was time. It's time to move on. So now you have a guy that's already questionable. He's already been less than 500 where he's been. They start to fade. If you see that, even though it's laid back, far as the media doesn't come out, what affects people? And that's bottom line money. So I'm just wondering, does it start to permeate if that happens?
Let's discuss that on the other side. It's all brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Hit us up on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. You can also join the conversation on the phones. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Here's Anna with what's coming up on the game.
All right, thanks, Joe. What's coming up on the game is sponsored by Ticket Crushers. The Giants named Gabe Kapler as the 39th manager in club history. The team will introduce the 44-year-old today in a press conference at noon, which we will air right here on 95.7 The Game. But who is Gabe Kapler? Kapler spent the past two seasons as the Philly skipper. But what kind of growth can we expect with the team? Joe Lo and Dibs will discuss. 49ers have been flexed in week 12 versus the Packers, then week 16 versus the Rams. As for Sunday against Arizona, while Emmanuel Sanders and George Kittle are considered day-to-day, how this team bounce back after a loss? DeForest Buckner will join Damon Rado and Kolsky today at 5. Warriors hit the road next up, L.A. to face LeBron and the Lakers tonight. Coverage starts with Warriors Live at 5:30. Tip-off at 7 right here on 95.7 The Game. Got a ticket, suspended license, DUI, don't pay. Let the attorneys at Ticket Crushers go to court for you and crush that ticket for as little as $149. Ticket Crushers knows how to win. Call 866-TICKET-HELP. That's 866-TICKET-HELP for a free consultation. I'm Anna Kukadakis on 95.7 The Game.
This first year out, there's still a bit of a grace period. Remember, you got a lot of bad contracts you got to work your way through. You're in a tough division. Who knows how it's going to play with Bumgarner? I don't see him coming back, but you never know. Maybe if he's willing to take a team-friendly deal, he's back with the club. But this year is going to be one of those, all right, we're still kind of building it up. Butcher Boy joined us a few minutes ago. I said it earlier today. He and I are aligned on this. By next year, not the upcoming season, but the season after, that's when you at least have to find your way into contention by the end of the season. You don't have to win the World Series. You don't even have to make the playoffs, but you got to have a semblance of competition. You have to be a reasonable baseball club by that point in time. Now, if you want to get to know Gabe Kapler, who better to go to than people in Philadelphia who watched this day in and day out over the last 2 years? Howard Eskin, the king of Philadelphia sports media, joined us a few hours ago. He had this to say about what went wrong with Kapler in Philadelphia.
I wasn't a big fan of the way he managed, and I don't think the people were either. After a game where they get beat by Milwaukee, I think it was 20-something to 4. Really, they got just smoked. It was just, and the series was terrible. And afterwards, you know, everything was fine. He wasn't happy with the loss, but everything's going to be fine. Everything's not fine sometimes.
Now, that may be part of the reason why it didn't work in Philly, but Eskin continued. He thinks it could work in San Francisco.
He's a smart enough guy. He's a very intelligent guy. Maybe he's learned from the things that didn't work here. Everything can't be okay if you get beat 4 or 5 times in a row. It can't be okay. And sometimes you got to have more discipline in the locker room, which I don't think that he had. He was too accepting of players that didn't play hard. And he didn't do anything for the longest time when they dogged it. But he's smart enough to maybe learn from his experience here in Philadelphia. And from that standpoint, he might be good for the Giants team.
This is what's interesting, one of the many interesting angles of this hire. When you have a skipper like Bruce Bochy, who's had so much success, no matter how he handles anything, everyone's cool with it. Because it's Boch, right? What Boch says goes, and Bochy we trust. Steve Kerr's at that point, too. I know some people still like to nitpick some of it, but Kerr's done so much over 5 years. If he makes a decision, are you honestly going to come on air the next day and be like, man, Kerr has no clue what he's doing? When you have that level of success, I'm talking next level success, very few people are going to question how you handle decisions. You might talk about it. You might suggest other avenues, but you're generally going to side with the manager because he's done it. He's been there before, and he's had success, and you believe in him. Kapler's coming in. He's blank tape. No one knows anything about a couple stats in Philly and this thing with the Dodgers that may or may not have been a cover-up, and it wasn't handled properly. That's all they got. So it's going to be interesting when you watch how he handles these interactions. Say they open up the season with a 3-game losing streak. Right out of the gate, is anyone going to ask, what's the mindset in the clubhouse, and then how does he respond? How do you want him to respond?
You want him to respond with the tenor of the team really in mind, and when you've got a younger team and you've got some veterans, Lowe made a great point earlier about the first order of business, which is you get the job, and you say, let me get Buster's number, let me talk to the two Brandons, let me talk to Johnny Cueto and see where he's at, and Jeff Samardzija, talk to the veterans and let them know where you stand. The manager's 44 years old. Samardzija's about 35, I think 34, 35. So the closeness in age is remarkable. And then you talk about the younger players. You set a tone. If they start out 2-8, for example, you wouldn't expect them to go in and flip the spread because that would be a dramatic 180 from the way this clubhouse was handled in the past. I think you have to kind of come in and implore your own techniques, but also bear in mind where this team has been, where these veterans have been, because Bruce Bochy, pretty even-keeled, as Butcher Boy was mentioning. So if you come in totally volcanic hot, that probably isn't the best approach.
How did Norv Turner introduce himself to you guys when he took over for Marty Schottenheimer? Because everything you've told me, you guys loved Marty. Like, Marty was universally beloved as a player's coach.
Yeah, players loved him. The community loved him. Norv came in, and the first thing you got to do is you got to try to grab that locker room. And how do you grab the locker room? You go find the guys that are not necessarily the best, but you go find the best leaders. You go find the best guys for the team. You go find the guys that you know have a sphere of influence in that locker room, and you want to make sure that you align with them. And you want to make sure you align with the right guys. Because there's a lot of guys that's been in the league a long time that you don't necessarily say, oh, my God, they're not walking step, lockstep with you. And you maybe don't get that particular guy. But you find those guys that you know, you can ask who's the leader, who shows up, who's those guys. And you do that and you say, hey, look, I'm not trying to discredit anything, Marty. Hey, guys, I'm not Marty. I understand what you guys were. Norv came in, I'm going to still run the ball, guys. I know you guys. He knew who Marty was. So he said, hey, I'm still going to run the ball. So at least you give the perception that you're going to do it, even though he probably didn't as much as we'd like. But at least he's going to tell you what you want to hear. And after you do that, you got to make sure that Farhan and, you know, he brought in the GM, he brought in the manager, brought in the guys that he want. Now they got to be lockstep. You got to make sure. And when you have a GM that's not necessarily with the coach, the GM that's not backing the coach, then you can see guys can go ahead and circumvent. You saw how that worked out with RG3 and the Shanahans. When you can go to the owner and go those different things, you got to make sure that there's a unified front, that you're preaching a message, and that's what you have to do. You got to get the buy-in from the top, which Farhan has. He got the guys that he wanted. So now you have to make sure that permeates throughout that clubhouse and getting guys to buy in. Not to discredit Bochy, because that's the worst thing you could do to a Hall of Fame manager. Worst thing you do is say, we're not doing anything that he did. We're tearing down all the Saints. No, those aren't the thing. You just add on. You got to bring the new in with the old, and it's got to complement one another. And that's the way you draw those guys. With loving kindness has I drawn thee. So I think if he can do that and get that locker room to buy in, he can have some success.
One thing I'm concerned about is the fact Michael Morse joined us a couple hours ago, and he didn't seem overly thrilled with the hire. Now, he didn't bash it. He was very reasonable. It was a great conversation. So you can check it out on radio.com, Rewind, download the app, all that great stuff. Yay, Intercom, that's how you promote.
Yeah.
That's how you go above and beyond. But he came on, and he seemed to question a little bit. And he kept going back to Boach, right, how beloved Boach is. Boach is a Hall of Famer. Boach is first class. Boach is world class. You still have guys on this team that only know Boach.
Right.
Buster came up with Boach, has only ridden with Boach. Belt, Crawford, that's what you've seen. I find it hard to believe that every Boachy lover in that locker room, and that's probably not the best way to articulate it, but, you know, the guys loved him. I find it hard to believe that every single person is going to get right on board with the new guy. I think there's going to be tension. Boachy did not retire. Remember that. He was run out. They did it in a very graceful way, but Boach made it very clear at the end of the season, he's not done managing. He would love another opportunity. He has made that clear. So he did not retire. He just was asked basically to – he was not asked to come back. So what I'm thinking is there are going to be guys in there that didn't like the way that was done, and that could cause some animosity. Is that a reasonable concern?
It is, but I think it's also reasonable to say, Lo, that not everybody in that clubhouse liked Bruce Bochy. To think that he had a 100% approval rating, I think, would be naive of us. I don't know if any coach in any locker room has ever had that. So two things I think in this case, Lo, could be equally true.
Yeah, no question. I think that the biggest thing, though, is guys just want to be respected as well. So as long as he comes in and he says, look, I'm going to respect these guys and respect who their leader was, that's big. Now, if you know, and Buster and those guys know this is a new era, and they understand that. And when you're hanging on and you're a little older and all those different things, you don't necessarily rock the boat. You say, hey, look, you're going to question. You're going to be able to say, look, hey, this is why I think that. I think that he's going to welcome that. The worst thing he can go in and say, oh, that doesn't work. You can't tell a guy that's been in the league that long it doesn't work. You got to be able to say, because if you just do that, then you're being narrow-minded. You're being farsighted. You have to be going at this manager job as a skipper and understand that these men have a voice. You don't have to listen, but you got to respect them. You need to listen, but you don't have to necessarily change the way that you're going to do things. But you do have to listen in order to bring these things together. The most alarming thing that I'm hearing is always the second half. Because he's laid back and he is a player's coach, that he lets guys, sometimes they say get away and guys don't work as hard. Guys need to be challenged. In any sport, you have to continue to challenge guys. Iron sharpens iron. If you let guys just become complacent, and that's the thing that is alarming to me, guys will just take. They will continue to take, and you've seen his track record. That's the thing that he has to get the right coaches that is going to push his message if he's not going to be at the forefront doing it.
I wonder if the perception that he's really just going to be a guy who takes his orders from the front office is true. If it's going to be, hey, here's what we want the lineup to look like today, and then in the sixth, hey, here's who we want coming out of the bullpen. I wonder if that's true. We'll discuss that next here on 95.7 The Game. It doesn't matter, is what we're being told, who the manager is, because they're just going to take their orders from the front office. The front office is going to tell you what lineup they want that day. The front office is going to tell you what bullpen moves they want. You're really just going to be the guy on the field making those decisions. Howard Eskin said the same thing earlier today. He said he hates analytics because it has no feel for the game. You're really just doing everything based off of a spreadsheet, and you might as well just have a computer in the dugout handing out the assignments. I'd like to see that. I really would. It'd be cheap.
Yeah, but then you have to deal with the actual human element of, fine, here's the lineup, and let's say Buster Posey's at first base and Brandon Belt's not, and Belt says, hey, what's the deal with me not playing today? And you just wave the spreadsheet in his face. That's not the way you communicate and get the most out of human beings.
Take it up with the spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's right. The spreadsheet doesn't lie, kid. If you got a problem, go see, you know, the new GM, and then go see Farhan. We'll just go ahead and kick that all the way up the ladder. It's not the way that works.
What's not clear? Box A6.
Yeah.
You're in left field.
Yeah.
That's going to be
highlighted
tough.
In yellow.
It's going to be tough to get guys, everyone to buy in, especially when you got so many Latin American players that come over. Can you teach that? Do you teach that? How does that permeate over to your clubhouse when you got a guy that, hey, like Dibs just alluded to, that's saying, hey, okay, I go talk to the computer. And you say, I know we say it, computer's doing it, but it's pretty much a computer's doing it. It's going to Farhan and whoever the manager, and they say this is what the numbers say. So it is pretty much that. Hey, this is what the numbers say. So you are pretty much. Hey, I can't argue. This is what the numbers say. So I'm doing it. And you do start to lose that human touch, and you do get guys start to check out because one day's up, guys on a little heater, like, you know, people talk about, hey, right. Guys on a heater, and analytics say go it another way. Sometimes you got to trust that gut instinct, and that's where it becomes hard, and that's where you start to lose players. That's where you get that inconsistency if you go too much.
And that's where the manager has to be the master communicator. Absolutely. Because to your point, if a guy's 6 of 8 over the last 2 games and he feels like he's locked in, but he's a left-hand hitter, they're going to throw a lefty, and the spreadsheet says, don't play you against a lefty. The manager, Gabe Kapler, has got to be able to go to him and say, look, this is what we're thinking. We told you at the beginning of the year, this is our philosophy. We're sticking with it. Stay hot, buddy.
You have to educate. You have to educate. The single greatest problem in baseball right now is that you have a divide in philosophy. On one hand, you have the analytically driven people. On the other hand, you have the manage by the gut, do it old school people. Neither one has to be viewed as better than the other. Neither one has to run the other one out. It doesn't have to be a zero-sum game where one wins and the other's eliminated. But if you are an analytically driven front office and you don't have 100% buy-in and understanding, it is on you to educate the managerial staff, the players, and to some extent the fans as to why your system works. Travis Salchik has a great book. It's called Big Data. All right, Big Data Baseball. It's all about the Pirates and the rise of the shift. They were the ones that brought the defensive shift to the forefront, and they knew it was going to be a big problem. And even to this day, people hate the shift. They hate it because it's not conventional. Nobody likes what they don't understand. So all of a sudden, these Pirates pitchers are getting ready to face an opposing batter, and all these players behind him are moving around. And then the first time the guy hits one to a spot where a player should be, the pitcher loses his mind. The Pirates knew going into this was going to be an extraordinarily difficult sell. So if memory serves me, and I read this thing like 5 years ago, but if memory serves me correctly, they had two guys they brought in, and they were basically analytics guys that were lower level, so they weren't the front office guys. They were representing the front office, and they traveled with the team. They were with the team at every turn. And their job was, number one, to convince the manager at the time, I want to say Clint Hurdle, convince the manager at the time why this works, why it's being implemented, how it works, and understanding it, right? Communicating that. And then working with all of the players, especially the pitchers individually, so that they knew why they were doing it. The worst thing you can do is try to bring something new to the forefront, not explain it, and just send everyone out to do it. People are set in their ways. People want to go about their business. They wake up at the same time. They have the same cup of coffee. They kiss their husband or wife goodbye. They go to work. They do what they do, and they come home. We're creatures of habit. When you want to break that habit in such a dramatic and radical way, you've got to communicate properly, but you've got to educate. That's why it worked in Pittsburgh.
Right.
They educated the pitching staff as to why this was important for them and why it would help them.
I talked to a guy that happened to be on the Boston Red Sox coaching staff. Shout out Tommy Goodwin, Fresno State. He knew they were going to, he said he was happy when they played L.A. because their coaching staff understood what they were going to do. L.A. went and had two guys that were hot because of the pitching matchup, and they didn't play them because they looked at analytics. So some guys, they feel that, and they're like, okay. So it helps some teams, too. So you do. You got to be balanced. That's just a prime example. When you're not balancing, you're just going with the analytics, it hurt a team, possibly cost them a championship.
Darryl the Guru Johnson in the studio here with us on 95.7 The Game. Your show's coming up in a little bit, but I got to ask you, I saw you were hot out there. You came in, you wanted to give me your take. I said, save it. I'd rather hear it on the air. How do you feel about the Gabe Kapler hire?
I think it's embarrassing. And
really?
When you have children, like we all do in this room, you look at the world through a different prism. And I read an article from TheRinger.com about Gabe Kapler and his handling of a sexual assault situation with two players on his team while he was a part of the Dodgers. It was gross, and in this new society, 2015 is not that long, and I thought Farhan was always the smartest man in the room, so why would you think it would be okay to make him your hire with... Let's not talk about the lack of X's and O's, which we saw with the Philly team that some would say is stacked, and now you got two clouds. I think he's deficient as a manager, but also the article that I read that really has me bothered. I have a daughter, you know, I got a sister. This is messy. It's embarrassing. And from the likes of it, just if I can take the temperature of social media, a lot of people are upset and wondering what Farhan could be thinking or what he wasn't thinking to give this guy the keys, who shouldn't have been a major league manager the first time, and he goes and gets a second job. I'm shocked.
Is there a thought that maybe the second second time through, you learn a lot of lessons. You learn not to make the same mistakes. Terry Francona, fired by the Phillies, went on to have a great career with the Red Sox, now with the Indians. A.J. Hinch didn't do anything with the Diamondbacks, landed with the Astros, won a World Series. Obviously, these are extreme examples I'm giving you. But is there a thought that maybe those mistakes could make him a better person, a better manager, and he could find more success here?
Well, you know what? There is a point, had those issues. You know, if we were to walk the two girls in here, the victims, and the families that were affected by his negligence, and then go into a computer and write a 240-word essay about how he's handling, you know, he tried to facilitate. That's over your pay grade. That's negligence, Lo. So you are right, Joe, if it was just about baseball. But to me, this is bigger than baseball, and you don't get a second chance when you make a mishap of this magnitude.
I ask you a question. If there's facts, and then there's, you know, opinion. So we can look at it just because something is a fact. Yeah. Does that mean that's the absolute truth? It's because I'm going to ask you, so I understand.
I'm going to say, I see where you're going. No, you're right.
Because you got to realize he probably got the email. So I'm just speculating. You think he's the only one that knew? Do you think he's just getting hired? Do you think there's a trickle-down effect? That how many in that organization didn't know? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, and Farhan was a part of that organization. So it's like a dark cloud to me. And I just don't feel comfortable. Dibs, I'm not trying to come in here holier than now, but this is bad to me.
I think it's deeper than just looking at one incident. It's looking at, excuse me, whether or not a guy has a chance to have a second chance. And you look at what he did. He says he was acting at the behest of what the Dodgers lawyers were telling him. And that's why I was saying to Joe earlier, I'm really eager to see today when he gets introduced how he approaches this, how he addresses this, because it's clearly more than just a dark cloud hanging over him, but to just preclude him or exclude him rather from any possible other job opportunity because he made a mistake. And Farhan Zaidi admitted as much yesterday. I don't know if that's necessarily quote unquote fair to hold that against him.
See, I don't like that. He said he was operating at the behest of the lawyers.
He was saying that the Dodgers attorneys basically told him.
Oliver North.
They told him how to act.
That to me, I don't like that. I want you to just own it. If you want to be forgiven, you got to own it. I don't want to hear about how it was someone else's problem and they told you to do this. You're a grown man. You grown man. You're responsible for your actions. You can go ahead and take the accountability. Obviously, the team gave you a chance with the job. So, you know, you're good. You're good. You're hired.
And this is one of the most storied franchises in baseball. And not every manager that the Giants have had has been successful. But he doesn't fit, Gabe Kapp.
Good show. We'll see you tomorrow, 6 a.m. here on 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.